No enemy speaks slightingly of Irish music, and no friend need fear to boast of it. It is without a rival. Its antique war tunes, such as those of O'Byrne, O'Donnell, McAllistrum, and Brian Boru, stream and crash upon the ear like the warriors of 100 glens meeting. And you are born with them to battle, and they and you charge and struggle amid cries and battle axes and stinging arrows. Did ever a whale make man's marrow quiver and fill his nostrils with the breath of the grave, like the Ulullu or Muire Uirtuaig of Munster? Thomas Davis.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. You can't imagine how hard it was for us to read Ulullu without laughing.
Hello, and welcome to the Pishrogues podcast.
Peddlers of Irish myth, folklore, and superstition.
Ooh, boy.
Let's jump in.
Well, hello, Luke.
Hello there, Aaron.
How are you getting on, kind dear sir?
Suffering daily. No, I'm joking. That's my name.
Suffering daily.
I'm the musician, Suffering Daily. Oh,
my favorite blues musician.
Blood, sweat, and tears into that Ulullu.
Ulullu.
Yeah.
I want to do it, man, but I know I can't.
Man, it's so loud outside. I think that I'll have to close the windows, even though it's hot. Someone's throwing about.
Thrashing things about there.
They're playing the Ulullu a little bit too hard out there, man. But how have you been, man? It's been a long while.
It's been a long time. There's been a bit of a break. Things are happening. Time is shifting.
Yeah.
The seeds of time have been planted and are growing now.
It's officially not lockdown anymore, I think it's safe to say.
Yeah.
Is that irresponsible?
I picked a bad time to go, huh?
No, it's probably the best time for you. Oh, that's a good...
That's unfortunate.
We'll wheedle that in, the news that we'll start the podcast in, and then we'll forget about it until that has to happen.
Yeah.
Aaron is... he's passing away. No, I'm joking.
I'm leaving this earthly coil.
Yes, into the great beyond. He's going to Magmel.
I'm going there to hopefully plant some trees. I'm not planting trees. Everyone thinks you're going to plant trees. I'm not going to plant trees.
Well, actually, I'll be honest. So, Aaron, and then from after this, we're going to pretend you're going to an Irish mystical land.
Yeah.
You can say it for yourself.
I'm leaving the country to Peru for 6 months just to see what happens. Find myself.
And not only...
Find some fairies.
Not only Peru. You see what the Peruvian fairies are like.
I've heard the Peruvian shamans are very in tune with their other world.
So that'll be good crack.
There's not many shamans or druids in touch with the other world. Well, that's not true. We have a friend who might get us in touch with the other world, I guess.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have that before you go as well. Yeah. But no, you're off to the Amazon particularly, I think, as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you're going to be in the Amazon?
After the Amazon rainforest, just to... try and help it out.
See, yeah, give it a bit of... it needs a bit of TLC,
it
man.
It needs a bit of a tummy rub and see, can I work it all out?
Yeah, it's got a bit of gas, man.
Yeah, so unfortunately, where I'm going, there won't be any internet.
No, there won't be.
So my voice will not make it back to these gorgeous shores of this beautiful country.
No.
It's bittersweet leaving the land I spent 26 years of my life in. But I'll be back someday, and hopefully I'll be better and offer more to it.
Oh, definitely.
Well,
and
that's
man,
the plan.
It'd be great to get out after being cooped up for so long.
Absolutely.
I'm going to say that this isn't the end of the podcast. We're going to see how it goes.
You can't know.
Pishrogues will always be Luke and Aaron, though. If I do...
Don't say that now, man, and you come along in 2 months' time I've left, and you're like... And I found someone else to do the podcast.
Mecca, Aaron. No. No, I mean, it'll always be Luke and Aaron is what I mean is I'll try and do it. I'll try and put up something. It might be shorter. Who knows? Because it's very hard to record on your own. I tried to do a pilot on my own.
Yeah.
I weeped.
This is another call out to you, dear listeners. If you have anything, write in. Luke needs help, guys.
I need help.
This boy needs help.
Yeah, and maybe I'll get on an idea I had. Maybe I bet everyone's listening to this from watching YouTube and listening to podcasts before. I know I hate change
in podcasts.
But what was it? I'll even see. It might be on my own. I might try and get good guests on.
There's some good guests out there.
I might even, an idea I had, Aaron, I was going to say to you was even someone there to be like a person who doesn't need to, you know, do the research or study for of more or less sitting in the place of the listener, if you get me, could be fun. Get
becoming almost blind.
Yeah, yeah, and I just, they don't have to say much except, oh, you know, like, I didn't know.
I think it's a terrible idea.
Imagine, not live on air. I'm not editing that out either. I really don't want you to continue with this. But no, we're going to see how it goes, and look, if it falls on its arse, won't that be funny?
I'll fly straight back. I will start my swim.
Can you send letters?
I'll try and send letters, yeah.
That's fair. So that's a promise to everyone listening that he's going to send every listener.
No. If you send in your address, fishrogues@gmail.com.
You'll have no bit of time in Peru. You'll just be sat there with quill in hand. But no, I mean, for myself, I might send you a letter and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And outside of the private love letters we'll send to each other, I'll send something that I can read on the pod.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Those are quite X-rated, so I don't want those right on.
No. Yo, man. But today's episode, guys, is very general. You've heard me harking on about it, but it's the music episode. I'd say music
it's
and era.
It's the Ululu
episode. We'll call it the Ululu. But now, I haven't looked up what the Ululu is, so I'm
so
very worried.
It seems to be a phrase that's used, so here we go. Someone died. Ululu, high on the wind, there's home for the slave where no fetters can bind. And then the next verse, Ululu, wail for the dead. Then the next verse, Ululu, kind was his heart.
I'm going to be very unprofessional on the podcast.
Go on.
Literally get up and close that window because there's a child doing the Ululu out there.
There's a child doing the chill child Ululus. Luke hops up on the bed, grabs the window.
Do you know we should, it's ruining the mysticism, but we should let our listeners know, because I do find it funny that, so the room we record in was Aaron Reedy's bedroom.
I think we should start. Yeah. So we started recording in Luke Conroy's bedroom yonder. When was that, man? Almost a year ago now.
Yeah.
October 2020, I think.
Yeah.
Then it migrated to my bedroom.
Yes.
And now my bedroom has turned into your bedroom.
Yeah,
I'm leaving.
I've moved. I've taken over. I've taken his bed. I'm going to be minding your.
Did you do
very,
a seance, man?
Do you know? I haven't done that. You see, I like your. You might. This room is currently a shrine to you, Aaron. I have a note that you gave me for my birthday.
For your birthday.
A note you gave me for your birthday. And I have
my ponytail palm.
Is that what it's called?
It can be called an elephant's foot plant as well.
Ah, yeah. So what I wanted to say as well is, Aaron, even when you leave, there'll be big phallic energy in the room. Yeah, so
I'm glad that my big phallic energy stays somewhere, because it's not coming with me. They said I can't bring that to Peru.
You can't bring that to Peru. No, man. The Amazon won't like that. Not in its current condition.
No, it needs comfort, man.
Imagine if you got there and all the trees were about that size, like whatever, 3 foot tall or something.
I'd be pretty disappointed, man.
Yeah, that'd be awful. But anyway,
let's go back to
Peru,
music.
And let's get into the music episode.
Luke, do you play music?
I actually don't, man. I think I play I play it over the speaker. No.
Yeah, I was going to say, I play mine through my phone a lot.
Yeah, that's about it. I'd say, I think it's a very benign sentence, but we are both big fans of music. I know everyone is.
I'm a giant fan.
Like, I can assert that because I knew you were leaving, this was a topic point I picked because I thought Aaron loves the music.
I think if a doctor had to diagnose me, he would say that I listen to music too much.
Probably. I won't say, a very short story was that when I met you one of the first few times, after a night out, this sounds sexual even though it shouldn't, we lay in a bed and I saw you shiver to music, which was amazing.
It was good music though.
That's the thing, so I would say you're sensory, you're very connected to it, which is
more
great.
To music more than anything else, I think it makes me feel an awful lot.
Tin Whistle,
but
did
good
you?
And bad, yeah, I played the Tin Whistle for a few years and you know what, man, I should have stuck with it. But I bought one there that I'm going to take to the rainforest with me.
Great idea.
I'm
going
to try and charm the rainforest. And just tell it to cop on and be better.
Get better. Go faster, I guess.
But yeah. So you probably know that Ireland is a very musical nation.
Yes, that's the thing, and it's very it's ingrained in our society, and so much we won't go into. It's not an episode on bards or Philly or, you know, those
not really
things.
They'll be mentioned,
but if as a brief aside, it was very important that a lot of our history was written to music, and you know, and limericks and rhyme, not limericks, but you know what I mean, rhymes. So obviously it's ingrained. I think anyone who is Irish or knows of Irish culture, I think there's almost this sort of synonymous relationship with us being a musical people.
Absolutely. And if, like, even the types, there's Shannos singing, Shannos dancing, there's traditional Irish music, there's all sorts of.
I didn't even know of Shannos dancing being the same, like having Shannos attached.
Shannos, yeah, do you know the one with the brush?
I
think that's a Shannos number.
Damn. And even the fact of the matter that I think it's crazy to remember that no more than the stories, I think we've had to talk about this, that we've often brought up to you that that stories aren't written down in a lot of Irish history. Instead, obviously, it was passed orally, and the same goes for Irish music, which
still
I think
goes.
Is yeah, that's very fair. That it's crazy to think that so much of the music has survived, in the sense that it was only ever, you know, you had to hear it to learn it, to pass it on.
Like, I saw Ye Vagabonds, big plug now for that Irish band, they're absolutely fantastic.
Yep.
And he was talking about the idea of, like, I got this song off somebody. That's a general statement that you hear from people, just saying that, like, I had to find someone, or someone had to teach me this song, because you can't look it up in a book, or you can't find it online, or you can't do any of that. You have to find someone who has been taught by someone else. So you'd hope when this member of this band grows up, he'll give that song to someone again.
Do you think
it just gets passed on that way?
Does he write it, do you think, or would that be in bad taste when he learns it by ear off someone? Do you think he'll snakey write it down, or do you think there's a bit need?
Know.
I suppose there's not a bit need. My fear
and
would be
I'm sure you
it.
Put your own twist on it all the time as well.
You get the general air.
Change and morph over time.
But yeah, essentially it's very important, and if there's one thing this episode has taught me, it's that music ain't just in the instruments, so we're grand that we don't know on our...
There's a lot of humming.
There's some man that we're going to find, and he just loved the humming.
He loved humming, and he hated everything about modern life in Ireland.
Everything. Well, should we read that one, actually, to get a start?
The music long ago differed much more than the music of the present day. They had no such instruments as gramophones like the people of today. Luke, you still use your gramophone?
Oh, every night.
The only instruments they had were the bagpipes, violins, and flutes. There would be a man in the village that would be able to play on the bagpipes. Everyone was nearly able to play the flutes and violins, but it was a bit difficult to play on the bagpipes. Long ago, there were some fine hummers and dancers. They were much better dancers than they are today. The most of the music long ago consisted of humming. If there was any people who could hum a tune, they would start off, and after a while, a band of people would join in. The hummers were much easier to dance with than the violins or the bagpipes. The music appeared to be much more clear and softer from that of the violins or bagpipes. The people had no dance halls long ago as they have at the present day. They would all gather together at some neighbor's house and would spend the night there singing and dancing. The most important of the fiddlers were Martin Salmon, Mrs. Salmon,
no relation.
Mary Morris, Michael Higgins, Michael Lyon, and John Burke. The most important of the pipers were Thomas Kearney, Michael Rainey, and Thomas Grorth.
An ogre from around about.
The most important of the accordions were Anthony Cunniff, Mary Doyle, Patrick Boyle, Thomas Lyons, and Thomas Ford. That was collected by Mido Jennings.
My favourite hobbit.
He was informed by James Jennings, who was a man aged 97 from Enniskerrily.
Well,
County Mayo.
He certainly sounds 97, and I mean that with respect, Mr. James Jennings, just of the...
The humming.
No gramophones today.
Yeah, he was seen like a crotchety man.
But I love it, man. I love this essence. And I generally mean love that... He preferred the humming to the instruments. He said easier to dance to the humming.
So that's very interesting. You'd imagine that the dancing would be so lively you wouldn't really hear the humming. But I guess if you had a whole room of people humming, that would be powerful.
Yeah. But our forefathers are looking back at us going, lads, that was a great time. What are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sure, man, they had rollicking parties.
But you know what's crazy? And I hate to bring it onto modern terms, but I suppose that's the point of the podcast.
Modern
terms. My gramophone is... No, I'm joking. No.
I've yet to see a working... Not like, I just haven't experienced a gramophone. I have a record player, but like the one with the owl... Big old horn coming out the top.
And can you wind it? Do you wind that one? I don't know. I've seen fake gramophones, and I assume they're fake because I've not seen them in use. You know what
I
mean?
Just the tube. They're just there for decor.
Decor in a bathroom
decor.
Or something. Decor. But no, just humming. Isn't it funny? It must be. You know, they say a big thing about music is getting close to the fewest spaces between you and the music is probably important. So maybe the humming has this sort of visceral, you know.
And the humming also, you get those vibrations in your chest and throat, so you're feeling physically the music as you're making it.
And there's a claim made, for instance, in the classic song by the dubious Kanye West. That song, Runaway, is the one where, Runaway from the baby, or whatever that one is, the weird one, big long one, you always see it in the ads. At the end, there's a guitar solo, but it was revealed that the guitar solo is just his voice.
Just his voice. Which,
and I feel like maybe that's
his voice played the guitar for him.
And he was there with Mado Jennings. They were all sitting around going, go on, Kanye. But... but no, very cool story, and cool to just get sort of the bare bones that, you know, you didn't need people who learned instruments or anything. Music was just around you in
and
Ireland,
it was
no matter
very
what.
Much, so much a part of Irish culture. We're going to read now a lovely mythological story about music.
And do you know what I'm going to say?
Its uses.
Anymore, when someone asks, do you play any instruments? I'll go, I do, yeah. And I'll,
I play myself.
I play myself all the time. Fionn MacCool had arrived at Tara on the night before Samhain, when the feast was just beginning. He was dressed in skins of wild animals, and he looked so proud and noble that the guards allowed him to pass in.
That's my hope, man, when I walk to places, that I'm dressed so well, they're like, ah, yeah.
You go on
go
in.
On
go
in.
In. Yeah, I'm surprised they wouldn't let him in anyway, but I suppose he wasn't the man.
He wasn't acclaimed yet.
Not yet. He walked into the room and stood before the king. No one spoke, but everybody in the hall was watching Fionn.
What is your name?
I am Fionn, the son of Cú.
You are the son of a friend,
said the king kindly, and he asked the attendants to find a seat for Fionn.
Find a seat for Fionn there. I like his voice changes every time.
I wonder if it's just because he was dressed so well. Anyway, when the feast was over, the king rose and spoke. He reminded them that an enchanter always came to Tara that night. Why are we here? No. The king asked, was there anyone who would save the royal city from the enchanter? No one answered until at last Fionn stood up and said, O king, I will deliver... That's definitely not what Fionn would sound like.
O king!
O king! I'm from England,
I will
but
deliver!
Stand and deliver! Oh, yo, yo! Anyway, O king, I will deliver Tara from the enchanter.
If you do this, Fionn, said the king, I promise here before the Fianna and nobles of Ireland that you may have any reward that is in my power to grant.
Fionn went out and no sound was to be heard on the roads and fields. Fionn was not afraid, although he did not know yet how he was going to defeat the enchanter. He heard a quick step behind him and he turned round. There stood an older soldier who had followed him out of the hall. He was holding out a spear and a cloak.
Noble Fionn!
He said,
your father was always very kind to me, and now I can do something for his son. Take this fairy spear and magic cloak. When you hear the enchanter's music, lean over the spear and hold it fast. Don't be afraid, and if you feel no fear, you will be able to stay awake. When the music stops, spread out this cloak, and you will keep the fire from scorching you.
At last he heard the music. It came nearer the sweetest music that mortal ears ever heard. The enchanter was coming. Fionn spread out... Sorry, everyone. Fionn spread out the magic cloak, and not a second too soon, the fiery blast was blown, and streaks of fire came through the air. Fionn felt a scorching heat, but fire came near him. Well covered by the cloak, he ran towards the enchanter. He hurled the spear at the giant's throat. Down fell the giant, and as he fell, the ground shook. Fionn took the head to the king, and never did Tara live again in fear of Samhain Eve.
What reward do you claim, Fionn?
Said the king. O king, said Fionn. I ask to be the chief commander over the Fianna of Ireland.
It is granted,
said the king. And that is how Fionn became leader of the Fianna of Ireland. And that's from collector Philomena McGrath from Castle Cooley in County Donegal.
I like that story. And we'll actually go into it. We could mention it now, actually, that there was kind of three types of music.
Oh, that's cool, yeah.
So we will just give a quick wee...
I'll just have a quick wee.
Breakdown of those types of music, if I can find them here now.
I loved your voice acting, Aaron.
Yeah, I wish I could be an old man better than I was.
You will have plenty of time for that.
So there is three types of music, and this was like music used as like a sort of to do things. Like that enchanter's music put everyone to sleep.
Yeah.
And made them afraid, I guess, as well. So one of the first type of music is Gantri, the music of happiness. Gultri, the music of sadness. And Suantri, the music of sleep and meditation. So I guess he was using Swan Tree on people to enchant them to sleep, and then I don't know what he did.
Oh.
What did he do when everyone was asleep?
That's a good... Oh, damn. Maybe cause all sort of havoc and mayhem.
Tie their shoelaces together.
I don't know. Slap them around. Put cream, whipped cream on their hands and such. It's weird that he's a giant only after a while. I didn't realize the enchanter was a giant.
Yeah, it's weird that they mix in that story, because I remember another story I read as a child of Fionn McCool, where he went into this labyrinth to save this woman. And in this labyrinth, the trick was that he was looking for another giant and he was going to behead this giant. That when you heard the sound of the giant, you were actually getting further away from him.
Oh.
So he had to walk through the labyrinth away from the sound. And when he got furthest away, he found the giant and chopped his head off.
That's a great thing to have in a game or something.
Yeah,
you're going further than you thought. I want to find a story, man. There's a great example of Heather Belts, who isn't even from Ireland. But no, she wrote a great thing about the use of music in Irish folklore, which suits our podcast down to the ground. So thank you, Heather. Oh, here it is. Yeah, so the Dagda, obviously, the god of gods, he plays the harp, a harp he finds hanging on the wall, and I'll actually read it as it's meant to happen. So in the story, the Dagda, the father deity of the two of the Danann, searched for his sacred harp, Uithna, who had been taken by the Fomorians. When the Dagda saw the harp hanging on the wall, he called it and began to use all three types of music. Opening with Galtri, he made the women in attendance weep. Continuing with Gantri, he caused the young people to erupt with laughter, and ending with Suantri, to lull the whole assembly to sleep in order to escape with his harp unharmed. And that's a great story how they all work.
The Irish kind of understood music as more than just something we sit down and listen to.
And enjoy.
Enjoy or to summon up feelings. They also, it had like magical powers in these stories that we're going to read, which I love.
So, what was it you, Heather goes into, as we've mentioned before, the oral transmission within pre-Christian Ireland and how important, obviously, Aaron, that in mythology, it was for spreading mythology, to the different clans and places. And obviously, as a result of that, there's lots of similar stories, as we know from the podcast, with different locations.
Things are changed.
Whatever it might be.
The essence of the story is the same, but the little frills and character names and places kind of change.
For example, they might add in, as we've seen in the story, that St. Patrick shook his stick at Donegal.
And the snakes watched on in confusion.
Well, I suppose actually St. Patrick was long after all of this. But, you get the idea of what I'm saying here. But she was just pointing out that the Fili were the poets or bards of Irish society. There was
They had a separate class, essentially, in society, which is mad.
And obviously, it takes sort of years. I remember hearing on... There's someone far more educated on us on this subject of, if you're ever looking for a podcast, Billy McGlynn on the Blind Boy podcast does a really good thing on this. On Philly, yeah. And he said, I think there's something crazy, like it takes 20 years or some, wild.
I would not be surprised.
Because you have to memorize so much stuff, I'm sure. And follow a man rather than read books.
You've got to know the ins and outs of the stories and know the differences between... These stories are almost identical, except in this location they used this character instead of this character and such.
They were different classes, and the poets were so well liked, I suppose, and respected in their knowledge and training, that they were free to move from kingdom to kingdom as they pleased. They weren't owned under any king.
Crazy here, it says, because of all this knowledge that they knew, true stories, and like obviously these poems were usually based in sort of a truth or a narrative that the people would have ascribed to, that they were involved in the adjudication of territory disputes, but they were feared for their ability to curse an object or person with the power of the recited word. So these were like really powerful. I wonder, were they before, after, or during a time of druids?
Or were they druids themselves?
Were they in a type of druid, but they only used the word rather than taking on like water and using trees?
You're dead right, or making sort of a concoction.
Concoctions and such.
I'm glad that we both thought of concoction.
Concoctions.
Jinx. But yeah, there was three levels within the hierarchy of poets.
The basic poet was just bronze. He didn't even have a name.
Oh, really?
Anra was the second grade poet with the silver branches on his staff. And then the olive was the chief poet.
That makes more sense than the chief.
Presented by gold branches.
Having no name. But and Heather, our best friend for this episode, goes even further and sort of talks about the two instances you'll see in Irish folklore when music is brought up. Sort of one being that music is intentionally used as a sort of magical instrument.
Employed to achieve a desire or a goal, typically one which furthers narrative. Just like that story there of the Dagda, where he played three different types of music there in order to kind of get all the people at present to get all wrapped up in the music and he could run away with his
heart. Really seemed to flex on it, didn't he? Because he could have skipped to the sleepy one if he
wanted. Oh yeah, but he wanted to show off that he was king of music.
They did steal his harp, so I guess he was
those
like, let me show you.
Those damn Fomorians, man.
Do you
on
think
that Tory Island, did they ever give us a break?
There's a good lesson in that he was able to, they had the harp, but he was able to access the emotion.
He was able to play it exactly.
Yeah.
But it's a funny one, man. There's no point, like, I've heard people giving out to people singing songs that you can't sing it, you have to feel it.
Oh, that sort of thing.
You have to be telling
a
story, not just singing the words.
And
then there's another type of music then, which is sort of an indirect use of sort of magical music, or music that performs a supernatural function without the performer intending it to. So we have a story here called Chokmar Etna, and it's from the Ulster Cycle. So we'll fly through this, will we?
Yeah, we will indeed.
So, it describes Aetna's unfortunate situations. This story begins with Midir, a handsome prince for the Tuatha Dé Danann, and his wife, Fumnuc. After Midir's foster son leaves, Midir becomes lonely and leaves his wife in his fortress to visit the sun, which is interesting. Imagine you got so lonely after your son left for college, you'd be like, Jesus, my wife. I need to go away to college to meet my son.
Yeah, I'm going off with him.
I can't be in this house with you. On the way, he meets a king's daughter.
And that's not happening to you, man. That would be awful. Dad!
Awful.
Anyway.
On the way, he meets king's daughter, Aetna. Her beauty is famously known, and Midir immediately falls in love with her. That's unfortunate. He takes Aetna and goes to his son's home, forgetting anyone else exists. He stays with Aetna for a year before returning to his own house and wife. Fumnuc grows jealous of Medir's love for Aetna. So, like, not only did he return home, but it seems like he came home with his new woman.
I went off to
see
my son.
This is my new wife, old wife.
Yeah. Not only can I not stand you, I found someone way better in college.
After showing Medir and Aetna false love and comfort, Fumnuc takes Aetna to her room and curses Aetna with a wand of scarlet rowan berries. Aetna disappears and only a puddle of water remains. Fumnuc flees in fear of Midir. Once Midir realizes both women are missing, he frantically searches the castle for Aetna. Doesn't give a crap about the other woman.
No.
Fearing that all was lost, Midir returns to his chambers, full of sorrow. Back in Aetna's room, the fire begins to grow bigger and hotter. This leads the water to seethe and solidify, and a worm appears in the water. Still, the fire grew, causing the worm to turn into a large, beautiful crimson fly with jeweled eyes and enameled wings. As the fly begins to move her wings, the most beautiful music is created, sweeter than the sound of the harp, horn, or pipe.
Sweeter than the sound of a horn.
Oh, the sweet horn. In this new form, the fly shines bright like any jewel. and fills any area with a sweet fragrance. That's a mad fly, huh?
Yeah, she's even beautiful as a bug.
Beautiful as a bug. The dew that falls from the fly's wings has the ability to heal any person it touches. This fly is, in fact, Etana.
Wow.
Damn it. Dew's falling from her wings.
Damn. Etana immediately looks for Medir. Finding him in his room. She begins to play her music in an effort to soothe his pain. Medir knows right away that this creature is Etana. They travel Ireland together, with Etna providing comfort. Imagine seeing that, the sad man in his book.
Well, he's a happy man in his book now.
Oh, I love you. With Etna providing comfort and happiness through her music and warning Medir any danger he may face. Siúlamh, still enraged with jealousy, finds Etna and using the same wand conjures a druid's wind that takes Etna far away. She really can't get over
can't
how
get
annoying
over
yeah, this homewrecker, never letting her rest. After traveling for so long, Etna becomes exhausted and cannot find the wind anymore. She blows into the banquet hall of Atar, a hero of Ulster, during a feast and lands into his wife's golden cup of wine.
This is where things go crazy.
Atar's wife drinks the fly. And 9 months later, she gives birth to Etna. imagine if she was fully formed. Etna grows up loved and is given anything her heart desires. As she turns 20, she begins looking for a husband.
Fairly old in those days now.
That's good. She loved the High King, Iachi. She could pronounce his name, since she was a child, and one day he approaches her with the intention of marriage. They are happy together and plan on spending the rest of their life together. At a banquet in Tara, the king's brother, falls in love with Etna and tries to pursue her. After many failed attempts at meeting together to discuss the situation, Etna gives the brother one more chance. A figure approaches Etna at the meeting location, but Etna knew it wasn't Elil. She demands to know who this stranger is. Medir reveals himself, and explains
it's
that Etna is actually his own wife, lost to him. I wonder what age he is at this point.
He must be at least in his 60s, 70s. Mm,
he begs her to return with him, but she refuses for her love to Eichi is strong and true.
Imagine you... I presume she doesn't remember the past life.
No.
And this crazy man comes up to you and is like, you're my wife!
You
remember?
Were a jeweled bug, remember? You used to sing to me.
We traveled the world together.
I do feel bad for him, but he also was a bit of a goose with his wife. But also what I find funny about this at this point, man, is she's willing to come speak to Elil about it. But then she realizes...
She gives Elil, that was a strange sentence.
But maybe it's...
She gives Elil a chance to love. And then this next sentence says it even again. She leaves Medir and returns to her king. She tells Eaki what happened and they rejoice together. Their love defeating anything standing in their way. After she's just given permission for Elil to try and chase her down.
Yeah.
As a lover.
Damn.
Eaki's own brother. Strange.
Throughout this story, this is now from Heather's wording. Throughout the story, the main character, Etna, experiences many hardships, much like one might experience in their own lives. Though Etna is cursed and sent through her various trials, she endures and creates a positive and happy environment, which eventually leads to her reward, a happy ending with King Eaki.
That's almost like a lesson in life, man.
It is, yeah.
No matter what's dished to you, positive outlook, positive attitude, and it'll just work out, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Jesus, you'd hope, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I feel like your man had the weirdest arc in this life, Medir. He was there, and then the bug happens, and then...
Yeah, how do you think...
I don't know how he found her, even.
Yeah. Do you think... She looked the exact same.
She must have done, and he was like sitting old, watching TV. I'm joking. And she comes up on screen. No, but that's a crazy story, and I think that really gives the... I don't think... It really has a fairy tale-esque quality
very
to it.
Much
you know
so.
What I mean? And
yeah,
I think you don't always get that. They're usually a bit more based. So I really like that story.
I like that tale.
Yeah,
so that was kind of like... Etna didn't have that... I didn't have a magical ability where she could pick up instruments and play them, but when she was cursed, in this curse she was given the power to have beautiful music flapping from her wings when she flew around.
So that's a little, it's like side effect music, magic there.
Pretty much.
And
Heather Belts is a great name as well.
Is that Heather Belts? Yeah.
But
will we take a little break and we'll go into a very well known story of sort of circumstantial magic.
Let's do it.
All right, so this is Gach Lewis Capel Er Lachra O Leanshig.
What does that mean?
Two horse ears on the man,
on that dude, yeah.
On that guy, yes, thank you. once there was a king named Labra O Leanshig, and he had horse ears. There was a certain barber chosen every... Oh, sorry, it's a barber was spelled really
bar-bar.
Weird. Barbar! There was a certain barber chosen every year to cut his hair, and this barber was killed. What fear he would tell the secret to anyone. This time, there was a widow's son chosen to cut his hair, and the woman begged of the king not to kill her son. The king spared him, but he had to keep the secret to himself. Sometime after, the boy got very sick, and the doctor said he would never get better until he would tell the secret to someone.
That's interesting. The doctor knew he had a secret.
Isn't that great? Place. And yeah. I think that's a true... It's great that they, back in the day, they were aware of, like, you're holding something in. Come
That it's... It's very much that your mind is connected to your body health, which is something we're only kind of discovering again now, I feel.
Yeah, definitely.
That mental anguish can cause physical pain and such.
The boy went into a wood and told it to a tree, and he got all right. After that...
Hey, I'm all right!
I got all right, don't worry. I'm not good, but I got all right. Yeah. After that, the king's harp got broken, and a man was sent into the wood to get wood to mend it. And he got a piece of the tree that the boy was after telling this his secret to, and mended the harp with it. The first time that the harp was played, it said, Togá Cluas Capel Eg Lahra Oleanshig. And then everyone knew the secret.
Damn.
That was from Damn.
I don't know why my voice broke.
It's very late. The collector is Michael Lernahan. And the address is Leitrim, County Clare, which is very funny to me.
I think his probably name is Michael Lenehan.
Oh.
But there's an R in there. Oh. Michael Lernahan.
I'm very good at learning. But yeah, that's great. And you probably know that story already. I feel like I had an illustrated book with this in it or something.
I don't know what the lesson there is. That the king should have been like, yeah, I have horse ears. What of it?
It's very... Yeah, because it always reminded me of the king's... You know, the one of like the... King's New Suit or whatever it was called. I know it has no message to it the same, but it always gave me the same feeling reading it. You know the one where they make him, they pretend the tailor makes the king a new suit.
Mm.
And because he's surrounded by yes men, they all tell him, your man says, oh no, it's only invisible to you. These threads are actually really, really nice. And then all his subjects go, yeah, it's gorgeous, it's gorgeous. But then when he goes out, he's absolutely naked, yeah, and everyone laughs at him.
Nice.
And it kind of shows you how, like, oh, don't trust those sort of people that are
those
always
people who just want your power and your money and your love for no good reasons.
But yeah, I don't know, in this instance, I suppose in a good way it's like how the boy should, you know, you can't keep a secret, you should hold, you know, you shouldn't hold it in, but then he does suffer as a result of
so
it.
Maybe the king should just kill them anyway.
I know. Maybe you can't tell a secret. Imagine if you could birth it with music and you haven't really said it, but it's came out and the people start to know. I bet your man can't blame the boy anymore.
Imagine how frightening it would be to play a musical instrument and hear a voice coming from it saying things.
Terrible.
Scary.
It's Kanye West.
Scary. Kanye West, this incredible mouth guitar.
So
the harp in Irish history.
Great stuff.
So it seems that the harp is probably more of a Gaelic instrument.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of tied to Scotland and Ireland. That is kind of depicted first in Scotland, it seems.
Yeah, or even it went on that said, look, it says it's an Irish and Scottish instrument, but what is very odd, it comes from the Cruth. Is like a sort of, you've definitely seen it. If you want to look it up, it's like a C-R-U-I-T or C-R-W-T-H in Welsh.
Mm.
And it's, if you look at it, it looks like an instrument you would see out of Game of Thrones or something.
Yeah,
sort of
like
thing.
The lyre, the Greek lyre.
Yeah.
Similar to that.
And there's a great quote, if I can find it, from Gerald of Wales, is the only person we really have to...
Oh, yeah. I don't like what he was saying, but yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we found him before.
We did. And he wrote Topographica Hibernico.
Yeah.
Expugnatio Hibernica. Mm,
great. I have that book right beside my toilet
in
the bathroom.
Let's open it right up.
He sort of makes the claim that Ireland, was, like, as it is now, known for the harp, but that... He kind of, I don't know if I believe him, but we'll just find it now. What does he say? Scotland, because of her affinity and intercourse with Ireland, tries to imitate Ireland in music and strives in emulation. Ireland uses and delights in two instruments only, the harp, namely, And the tympanum, of course. I love the tympanum.
My favourite.
Scotland uses three, the harp, the tympanum, and the crowd. In the opinion, however, of many, Scotland has by now not only caught up on Ireland, her instructor, but already far outdistanced her and excels her in musical skill. Therefore, Irish people now look to that country as the fountain of the art. I don't know about
why
that.
He's creating a competition between us and Scotland, but I think the reason I've been thinking about this, that Irish and Scottish culture is so similar, is like we were on the fringes of Europe, and it seems that as on the fringes, our kind of holdovers from the Celts and their influence on our culture has stayed longer than it has anywhere else. So that's why we're very similar. Also, we live in harsh countries.
We got Brigid, both of us.
Got Brigid. We've got an oppressor called England.
And Gerald. No, I'm joking.
Gerald talking smack about us.
But yeah, I'd say we both just shared the harp as an instrument. And sometimes Ireland was, it's the same as any, you know, musical thing.
Just like Dave the bagpipes and me the Dylan pipes.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, like, New York birthed hip hop, but then LA took over that scene, and then someone else. It's the same. Who
just
knows
like
who birthed?
Battered Mars bars in Scotland.
Yeah,
and we've battered fish.
Yeah. It's a give and a take.
So in Irish mythology, Canna Clu Mór was the mythological inventor of the harp, and often referenced as an Irish goddess of music, inspiration, and dreams. And Luke, you read this story to me before.
It's gorgeous.
So I'll read it this time.
Do it.
After an argument with her husband, Machul, she left to take a midnight stroll to clear her head. She heard beautiful music on the wind and was soon lulled into a deep sleep there on the beach. When she woke up the next morning, Canna Clu Mór realized the wind had created the music by blowing through partially rotted sinew still attached to a whale skeleton. She designed the harp based on this.
I think it's a crazy good story, man.
I would love to stumble across something like that.
And you know, I think I really want to deep dive into the meaning behind that, because it's obviously, it even says that she is the goddess of music, inspiration, and dreams in Ireland. And obviously, she creates the harp base of this. I think it's the storytellers of Ireland, I think, very smart with their lessons. She's had an argument with her husband. I saw in variations of the story, her husband maybe has passed away.
Oh.
And she goes off to the beach to grieve, or either it's to grieve the argument or grieve the death. And then she hears this beautiful music and it gives her solace for this second. But then she realizes it's been birthed of the pain of this whale. And I think that's once again this realization in Ireland, and that music, art, is birthed from emotion
from
and from
the misery.
The misery. There's a place called Misery Hill in Dublin, by the way. It's just outside of the Facebook headquarters, isn't that, Cass?
Is there a hill near there?
It's a little bit of a hill, but it's not that much. But no, I think a gorgeous story, and I'm surprised it's not told more. I don't know if it's like a New Age Irish mythology story, but I think it's real old.
Yeah, and here we go now. The traditional Irish harp's distinguishing features are its use of usually brass wire strings that resonate in a chamber created from a single log, traditionally willow. See, I thought that was crazy, because I think when you picture a harp now, you're picturing something gigantic. But if it's to be carved from a single log that creates this whole triangular shape, then I would say they were smaller. And it seems to say that they were smaller than the ones we have now, that their ones now are fabricated of three bits of wood glued together.
Mm.
Or just a gigantic tree.
Yeah, tree. Yeah, imagine maybe some giant out there, Mr. the Enchanter, was able to carve some sort of giant oak into a harp.
These highly tensioned strings are played with the fingernails, producing a very clear sound.
Gorgeous.
There we go.
If it's of interest to you, apparently, Brian Boru, one of the Brian Boru's harp is in Trinity College.
That is crazy. I would love to see that now before I go.
Playing
a tune on it.
Before I go. Yeah, imagine. Go on, give me a go.
Imagine if it calls me and I realize my calling was play the harp
in
Trinity College
forevermore. Or bring a big harp with you on the plane, or carve one out of a big Amazon tree. I'm sure they wouldn't mind making one tree.
I was just thinking, do you think you could carve a harp into a tree? But it wouldn't work, because I'm sure the sound has to resonate from
I get what you mean. I thought you meant like get a harp and busted into a tree. But no, they say that Brian Boruman, last High King of Ireland, was said to be an accomplished player, but he was said to be a great many things.
He's
so
a great man of many skills.
So he could be the Kim Jong-un of Ireland is what I kind of wanted to say.
Well, yeah. Hopefully not.
Hopefully not. I'd say he was a good man. And if you've ever been up the top near where the Bernard Shaw is now in Dublin, there's a pub called the Brian... Am I thinking the right one? The Brian Boru, and they've got a very funny...
I don't know, actually.
There's a pub anyway in Dublin called the Brian Boru, and it's got a very funny painting of a king. Of Brian with a big like smile and a big square jaw. I think I might be mixing up two pubs, but it's definitely... There's a mural outside. The Irish practice music and are eminently skilled in it. Their performance, both vocal and instrumental, is exquisite, but so bold and impassioned that it is amazing how they can observe the rules of their art amidst such rapid evolutions of the fingers and vibrations of the voice, and yet they do observe them to perfection. And that's from Polydore Virgil, a scholar from England in the 16th century.
Very nice words from Polly there.
Oh, thank God. He's a bit better than Gerald.
Nicer than Gerald. So the traditional harp can be traced over 1,000 years ago. Mm. But some of the earliest representations were sculpted in Scotland dating from the 8th or 9th century. So yeah, we shared a wee bit of the harp culture there. Mm. But as we all know, on the back of the Irish Euro and on the Guinness logo, there's the... harp has been used as like a symbol of Ireland. And this is interesting because music was such an important part of life in ancient Ireland that harpers were honoured above all other musicians. In social positions, the harper ranked at the top of the bow air class of nobility. Which is mad to think.
Hmm.
That by, like, it's just like we regarded the filly, the poets and the bards as a certain class of people that we did so with the musicians. Hmm. So it's a pity that the country doesn't seem to embrace our filly or musicians as much as they used and put them as a certain class.
I suppose it was such a rarity, man, to between the gift of having a harp and then being able to play it, the mix of the two.
Absolutely.
So crazy.
So then the English monarch Henry VIII declared himself King of Ireland in 1531. Excuse me, not 1531.
Where else is this from our...
Such was the fame from our...
Owen Roe, who also had a harp. He was one of the first people to use a harp on the flag.
Was he there?
Yeah.
Such was the fame and prestige of the country's harp, it was chosen as the official national symbol of Ireland and stamped onto the coinage of Henry's new realm.
Whoa.
So, as time passed, the Celtic social order began to wane as the decades passed. Harpers lost much of their status and their numbers declined. But one of the reasons, it seems, was that harpers were considered by the English crown to be spies and these powerful enemies of the state, of their state. So they decided to have them killed. Or I'm pretty sure there's a quote here from Queen Elizabeth issued a proclamation to Lord Barrymore in Ireland, said, "Hang the harpers wherever found and destroy their instruments in an attempt to gain control of Ireland." Which is a bizarre statement, that
Hang the harpers
to gain control of Ireland.
Damn, that could be shivers.
While this woman was enjoying Irish dances performed at her court in London by her own harper. It's
they obviously
don't
really
want to get into too much about how much they were able to stamp it all out, but you don't see harps been played that much anymore.
Damn.
Really don't think. Comparison to fiddles, violins, and I know they're probably cheaper instruments and they're easier to carry around, but still, the act of being a harpist. In 1650 and 1660, Oliver Cromwell ordered the destruction of harps and organs. Harps were burned and harpers were forbidden to congregate.
It's like they were trying to crush the souls of people, man.
Yeah, like,
it's crazy.
It's mad to decide, look, the sign of Ireland is the harp, so let's destroy harpers. Let's kill them, wipe them out, destroy their instruments.
Mm.
By the end of the 18th century, traditional Irish harpers were nearly extinct. To preserve old harping tradition, a festival was held in Belfast in July of 1792. All Irish harpers were invited to come and play. Prizes were offered for the best tree, but no one was to go away empty-handed. And only 10 Irish harpers and one Welsh harper showed up. That's pretty heartbreaking.
Yeah. That's really sad. Is that the same one? Is that that very important harping event that happened?
Yeah.
In Belfast. Yeah, they were saying the youngest is 15. And the oldest was 97.
97.
A mad.
Big gap there.
And a young man, and this is, it's been brought up by the name of Edward Bunting, was commissioned to transcribe the songs played during this festival. And that was really important. It turned out to be incredibly important that the few people that showed up to that festival, because we didn't have this history of writing it down, if Edward hadn't been there doing that,
would have been lost.
Yeah, lost. Forever. Tons of it. And think
I'm
the
sure
age
so
range
much
there.
Of it was lost because they were all killed and stamped out, and they didn't have that tradition of writing down their tunes. They just found other harpers and learned them from them.
And this quote here, man. Dennis Hempson was the last of the old harpers who played with the harp on his left shoulder. Oh, and used his nails to pluck the strings. What, on his left shoulder? Oh, wow. In the late 18th century, he was considered a relic of another time, who played tunes so old and forgotten that they were unfamiliar to other harpers. Hempson refused to play some of his tunes. There is no use in doing so. They are too hard to learn. They revive painful recollections.
That's sad, man.
Wow.
And he died, and when that man died, it was probably dozens.
I bet it makes him think of a happier time, which is unfortunate. He probably should have.
Or it makes him. Yeah, it's weird he decided not to transfer them on, but maybe he decided that there was no point.
And thanks to harpmuse.com, because they had a lot of good info in that on
I'm sure they did.
On harps, of course they did. One of the men that was there will fly through was Turlough O'Carolan.
Turlough O'Carolan.
And he's a great man. He's originally from Meath, I do believe. He lived between 1670.
Born in County Westmeath.
And he died in 1738. Oh, Westmeath, apologies. And he was there along with the other boys. The proper name for Dennis Hempson, and I feel like I want to say it in Irish, is Donacha O'Hamsig, by the way. I assume that's the way he would have pronounced it. I don't know why, but I just assume so. But O'Hamsig did play some of Carolan's music, but disliked it for being too modern.
Too modern, even though he was 100 years after him.
Was he though?
Was he at the same festival? Oh, were they?
Yeah, Dennis is the 97-year-old, and Turlough's the.
Turlough have been at a festival held in 1792 if he died in 1684.
That's a good question, man. But allegedly he was there. What?
No, I don't think he was.
Oh, never mind. I apologize, man.
He
just
didn't
like. Oh, never mind.
He's lying. He lay down for a while.
My ordinary lemon maths is coming true now, isn't it? he was there. Carolan is very interesting. I know of him because, well, I don't want to spoil where his life goes, but essentially I think for a long while he was taught poetry and stuff. His family were well enough to do, but when he got smallpox,
after being blinded by smallpox at the age of 18.
Yeah.
I didn't know that you could be blinded by smallpox now.
Jesus, that's a very bad case of smallpox in that picture, guys.
Yeah, I don't like looking at that now. It's not chicken pox, though. I thought I read it as chicken pox. I think smallpox is one of those ones now that we've wiped out, haven't we? We've vaccinated
but
against
he,
that.
He didn't harp before. He didn't play the harp before he was blinded.
No,
he played it after.
He took it up after, yeah.
Fair credit. And they say he even used to. So it's really me and Aaron were laughing before we started the episode of. He didn't compose music, but he did. But he did compose music, kind of, if you get me. He didn't write it down, but he did make up his own music.
Yeah, it's strange. There was a quote here. Is it? Can we find it?
But they say I read.
Although not a composer in the classical sense, Carolan is considered by many to be Ireland's national composer.
Although I'm not a singer, I have an incredible voice. he used to allegedly compose music even on his
On his horse, on horseback. So he used to travel around from place to place. He had a guide also on horseback.
Oh, that makes more sense. I imagine seeing a blind man flying around.
He was composing his tunes. He was called them Planxties. And there is a band called Planxty. I'm pretty sure, I forget, one of the a famous musician who's still alive was in Planxty.
Yeah, so I know that one.
Many of his songs are designated as Planxties, an obscure word that Carolan apparently invented or popularized to signify a tribute to a merry host.
Imagine creating. Imagine having that joy of being like, I've made this thing up, it's called a Planxty. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
that
you're
yeah.
able to, like, whatever.
So he used to just go around and perform incredible songs at incredible social events on the owl harp.
And he lived a good life, got married, I think, unfortunately, his wife died before him, had a few kids, settled down in Roscommon. And he died in, where is it called again? I should know it. I live
March
near it.
1738.
And that would be in Drumshanbo, was it?
Well, though, he was buried in Ballyfarnan, County Roscommon.
Oh, that's her. Ah, there's a statue to him in Drumshanbo.
This is a funny story now you have here. Probably not Carolan, but...
No, in Mohill. Jesus. He was buried in Mohill. Sorry. that's bad of me.
This
Mohill.
Is a great story with a bit of a rhyme on it. There was a man named Carolan who used to go around the district saying poems. The people called him Carolan the Poet. He used to take a great deal of drink, and one day he went to the parish priest of Trim for alms. Carolan knocked on the door, and Father Bain came and opened it. He asked Carolan what did he want. Carolan stood in the doorway and said, "Now, Father Bain, you're very main, and I so poor and naked, for in your hall there hangs a coat, and may I go and take it?" But Father Bain knew that Carolan was after spending whatever money he had on drink, and he said, "Now, Carolan the Poet, don't mind that coat, but there's the road and take it, for in my hall there's a stick, and on your back I'll break it."
Yes. Oh, hop.
That's from collector Joseph Finlay from Kilmess in County Meath. And Miss Finlay, maybe his mother or grandmother told him that story.
I want to clarify that that's not him as well, just in case.
No, I don't think it's that Carolan.
I love that story, man. I had to include it.
Riven Main and Bain.
Main and Bain.
You have to change the word to the way they would have said it back in the day.
You're awful mean.
Yeah.
What were you about to say there, sir?
He rhymes the priest now, I'm thinking. Does he rhyme, "Now Carolan the Poet, don't mind that coat"? Do you think...
Coat?
Because poet and coat don't really rhyme.
I'd say you're dead right. Yeah. You would say, that coat?
Yeah.
Doom now? Well, we read a few... I know we're late into the episode, but sure.
We'll fire through a few stories.
Why not? Do you know what I was going to say too, Aaron, since our last few episodes?
Yeah.
I have two bottles in the fridge. Would you like a wee bottle to soak while we play?
Crack a wee bottle. And pop culture, today a representation. While Luke's running out to the fridge to get that bottle, I'll just keep going here. Today a representation of the traditional harp is to be found on the presidential seal and on many official documents on passports on the flag of Leinster, but not the national flag. And Irish Euro coins, and as the logo for a number of prominent state-supported organisations such as the National University of Ireland. As one of the national symbols of Ireland, the harp is also used extensively by businesses and corporations wishing to convey Irishness. Guinness bottle labels are perhaps its most famous gig, while a heavily stylized harp puts in an appearance on the tail fins of a budget carrier, Ryanair.
Now, Aaron, do you want to be sponsored by Peroni or Moretti?
Can I have a Peroni, man?
Yeah, you may indeed.
I had a pint of beer at a Moretti.
Have you had one before we got on?
No. He's giving me a stroke to bring back the memory of it.
What happened?
But I thought it was quite over. Here, man, you had a cheers. Cheers.
That's terrible. Ah, this feels good. It feels good. Relishing in the months gone by recording.
Almost a year of podcasts.
And thank you, Gareth, for the music while we were... It helps during the music episode,
Gareth,
surely.
Gareth has many exciting projects coming, and I'm very excited for you all to hear them. I don't want to spoil any of them, but by golly, have your ears open, because by golly is he providing.
If they've been closed, get them open quick.
This is an interesting tidbit here. Ah. The biggest difference between the Guinness harp and the Irish harp that serves as the official state symbol of Ireland is that the brewery's harp faces to the right, while the state's harp faces to the left.
I found that interesting, yeah. I don't really know why.
Wasn't it told, though, like, isn't that like Guinness was... I don't want to bring religion into it, but
evil.
It was an English...
No, it's English, yeah.
So did you think it was like a joke or a...
Oh, turning... I don't
like
know
was,
that, man.
It was like it? Putting a cross upside down.
Oh, wow, imagine.
Putting the harp back.
Now, this is... I was going to do an episode on Guinness, but I decided not to because I do like a Guinness.
Guinness has come back. I know it never went anywhere, but Jesus, the young folk
are on it.
Pints of
Island's Edge is where it's at now, man. No, I'm joking.
Coming?
No, I'm joking.
Is it happening?
Have you seen it?
No.
It's out. There's this stout.
The Heineken, is it?
Yeah, it's out and they're trying to make it a thing. They say it's more refreshing than a Guinness, but I don't know if that's true.
It's a stout for non-stout drinkers.
Very odd. And the shape of the glass, I just don't enjoy. But
oh,
no,
I haven't seen the shape of the glass.
We could do an ep on it, so maybe I shouldn't bring it up. But apparently that Guinness squeezed the life out of the maybe more traditionally family-based
Beamish.
Stout. Yeah,
Murphy's.
Yeah. If you think about it, it's...
Murphy's?
Can you only get which... Can you? That's how you have to say it.
Can I have a pint of Murphy's?
Can you only get which Murphy's one can you only get down?
Monster.
Is it?
No, I think it's Beamish. Well, I've seen cans of Beamish up here, but I haven't seen it on draft.
Cans of Beamish always look like they're from 50 years ago, even
it.
Modern
I love
ones.
The retro.
Yeah,
retro vibe.
That's the mistake they made with that. I get what they were trying to do, fill the gap of a modern stout with the Guinness, but I mean with the Island's Edge. But I just think those two words are like oil and water. A modern stout. I don't know.
Why do you need it?
I really don't get it.
You have to be wearing like a knit jumper to drink stout, don't you?
There is a stone in Lachray called Clarsor. It is said that there was a harper going around from house to house playing on a harp. His name was Pad McMahon.
Pad.
Great name. Patrick.
You did a lot of sorting at the Pat.
Yeah.
Pad.
He had no house and he slept by the ditches. Oh, God love him. That's disgusting.
Maybe it's because he had no pad of his own.
Yeah. Oh. But it just goes to show, starving artist. He cut a hole in that stone and he
Maybe
put
he
his...
wanted life to be like that.
I love my
Jeez,
ditch.
Jeez, I love the ditch.
I can't get away from the ditch. Now, the wife lives in a big mansion about 2 miles away, but I just love the ditch. And he put his harp in there while he slept in this hole he cut in the stone. For a week before he died, he did not come out playing on his harp at all.
It's unlike him.
No, that's you could only imagine it back home. You know when you have that. Jesus, I haven't seen Pat out walking.
Yeah.
One night when a man was walking through the field where the stone was, he took up the harp and began to play on it. But Pat jumped out of the ditch near the stone. He said to the man, "Leave down that harp and never touch it again." The man left down the harp, and it was never touched again.
Touched again.
Wild.
Mother of God.
So the week before, he was just laying with his harp, kind of knowing he was about to go.
Isn't
it
mad, man? Because there's so much going on now, and you can have so many communications with so many people that you wouldn't notice a lack of habit like that of someone who had a habitual lifestyle of sleeping in the ditches and walking around playing the harp. That you're right. If you notice that in the community that he wasn't out playing the harp, you're like, shit. Something happened, Pad.
The only thing I have similar is, remember the old place I used to live, used to hear the ice cream truck going at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
But I never go, and I wouldn't be aware of it enough to think, Jesus, I wonder if the ice cream man's okay.
Yeah.
I haven't heard him. So, you might remember Bilbo Baggins telling us, or Mido Jennings, Aaron.
Good old Mido Jennings.
You know, a lot of people played the fiddle. A lot of people played the...
Sure, everyone played the fiddle and the old whistle back in the day.
Yeah, but not that many. And he even mentioned the violin. I wonder when the tin whistle came on the scene. Good question. But, no, the pipes, as he said, take quite a bit of skill. So, it wasn't everyone that was playing the pipes.
I'd imagine not.
And
they're quite loud. I don't know if you've ever experienced Illiner bagpipes live, man.
No.
They are ferociously loud. Like, incredibly so.
And I must say, speaking of the pipes, the cool dude from Firedraw... I don't know his real name. Firedraw's near that does... you know, he's in Lancome.
Oh, he's a great piper.
He's a great piper, and I hear it takes years and years and years to become a really good piper.
I would imagine, like any instrument, but I can see the craft in that one being particularly intense.
But we have...
Before we had Illan pipes, though, we had Irish war pipes.
Which sounds
Peel
wild.
Peel Vuur, which literally means great pipes.
And imagine that, so they were essentially... a part of me looking for this was because I saw that there's this class... I'll put it up on the social media at some point. There's something called a... the Carracks or something, that it's like a Celtic like war pipe, that it looks like they often have it, almost has a tongue in the trumpet of it, man, and it goes like, you know, that sort of thing. So these Celtic war pipes, I just thought I wanted to include it in the episode because it's like, oh, music for the purpose of battle is incredible, you know what I mean? They're called the Irish war pipes, in Scotland called the Great Highland Bagpipe, because obviously we have our Scottish cousins over there, but we have a few great, not much to say except we have a great story to finish us out
story.
In relation to the old pipes.
Now, do you want to take the little man version or the puka version?
Oh, man.
We flip a coin.
Yeah, which one do you prefer?
Well, they're an identical story.
Yeah, I
just subtracted one character.
I
think the puka, because feck it.
Let's do the puka. Yeah, it is funny too, because he says, there's a really fun quote from the puka, and for some reason the puka speaking is very gas to me. So, will we go now? One night, he was coming home. Oh, sorry. the Moretti's in me. Yeah.
Can't skip the start of it.
In the olden times, there was a half-foot living in the district, and he was a piper, and he could only play one tune. Now, I don't know what a half-foot is.
I'm going to look it up now, because I don't want to offend anybody.
Yeah. Not a half-foot. And when you look it up, though, it's really hard to find. It must be an old slur, I feel. So maybe I'll bleep it. No, I won't. He used to go around every night playing that one tune to every wedding and dance that would be in the place. And the people used to give him a lot of money. He used to make great sport for them. One night, he was coming home. He's kind of like that guy that runs around town with the trumpet going, burr, 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 burr.
Oh, yeah. Jesus, I've seen him in so many Instagram stories.
Yeah.
I wonder how much money he makes by just knowing that one thing.
I know.
I think skip all the words in brackets. They don't need to exist.
How dare they? Yeah. One night he was coming home from a house where there was a dance.
You didn't skip the word in the bracket again, man. You read it out again.
Oh.
Don't read the ones in
the
bracket.
One night he was coming from a house where there was a dance and he was half drunk. Why did they do that, man? When he came to a little bridge that was near his mother's house, he began to play and a puka came from behind him and flung him up on his own back. There was long horns on the puka and the piper got a good hold of them. And then he said to the puka,
"Let me home to my mother. I have money in my pocket for her and she wants it."
"Never mind your mother," said the puka. I just love him saying that. Make off. But keep your hold. If you fall, you will break your neck and your pipes. Then the puka said to the piper to play the Shan Van Vught for him.
"I don't know it,"
said the piper. "Never mind whether you do or you don't," said the puka. "Play up and I will make you know it." I want to tell everyone right now, whoever has written this has put in brackets with wrong words wrong beside words. Every right word.
Yeah, that's an interesting choice.
Anyway, the piper began to play and he played such music as made himself wonder.
"Upon my word, you're a fine music master,"
said the piper.
"But tell me, where are you bringing me to?"
The puka told him that there was a great dance in the Banshee's house on the top of Crowpatrick. "And I am bringing you there to play music, and I can tell you that you will get well paid for your trouble." Then the piper said to the puka that he saved him a journey because the priest put a journey on him because he stole his goose from him.
What?
I don't know.
That'll be important later.
Then the puka ran through fields and bogs and hills until he arrived at the top of Crowpatrick. The puka struck three blows on a rock with his foot and a great door opened and they passed in through into a fine room. The piper saw a golden table in the middle floor and hundreds of old women sitting round and about.
Heaven,
it. Heaven on earth.
A gold table.
Oh, the cheeks that would get squeezed that night. The old women stood up and welcomed the puka and they asked him who was that he had with him. "The best piper in Ireland," said the puka. One of the old women struck her foot on the ground and a door opened on the side of a wall and what did the piper see coming out but the goose that he had stolen from the priest? Then the piper said that he and his mother ate every bit of that goose and to look at where she was now. The goose cleaned the table and carried it away and the puka told the piper to play up music for these women. The piper played up and all the women began dancing until they were tired. The puka said to pay the piper and every one of the old women gave him a gold piece. The piper said that he was as rich as a lord.
"I'm as rich as a lord."
"Come with me now," said the puka, "and I will bring you home." They went out then and just as he was going to get up on the puka, the goose came behind him and gave him a new set of pipes.
Woo!
Thank you, Goose.
Thanks, Goose.
Then it was not long. This is a lovely evening for him. It was not long until the puka landed him at his own house. How did we not find this looking for puka stories? Then the puka told him that he had two things now that he had never before. Sense and magic and music.
That's a good line.
Yeah, you have sense and music. Then the puka told him never to be out as late again or to be drunk. So then the piper went home and knocked at the door and said that he was as rich as a lord and...
"I am the best piper in Ireland."
"You are drunk," said the mother.
"I am not,"
said the piper. "Because
I got no drink. Oh, because I got no drink where I was playing.
Then the mother let him in and he showered her the gold.
That's not what I said. Showered her with gold.
It's weird, though. No, terrible idea. Then the mother let him in and he showed her the gold and she was very proud of it. Wait now. Oh.
Wait now.
He said.
Until you hear the music I will play.
He buckled on the new pipes and began to play. And instead of music, you would think that it was all the geese and ganders in Ireland that were screeching together. And he wakened all the neighbours and they all began to humbug him until he put on the old pipes. And then he played the finest music that ever they heard. The next... what does that mean? So his first pipes were a load of poo-poo.
No, the new pipes that the goose gave him were bad.
Oh.
Goose pipes. They only made goose sounds.
Oh, that's wild. All right. That's funny. Funny move. I suppose the geese would love that. The next morning, the mother got up early and prepared herself to go to town to buy provisions for the house.
Provisions.
But when she went for the money, there was no gold at all in it, but yellow, withered old leaves of some plant. The piper went to the priest and told him his story, but the priest would not believe him until he put on the pipes and the screeching began, and the priest got awfully afraid. So then he put on his own old pipes and played fine music for him. And from that day to the day of his death, he was the finest piper in County Mayo.
County Mayo.
God help us. So that's from Martin Walsh, address Clahermore, County Mayo.
And
funny, what a wild story.
Luke found an identical story, except you sub out the puka and replace it by a little man.
Oh, yeah.
And also, instead of a goose giving him the pipes, it was one of the old women. But when he played the pipes, it still made the sounds of the geese and the goose.
Oh.
So it's interesting there that...
Still made the goose noises.
Yeah, even though it came from... But maybe it's because... Well, yeah. It didn't actually mention in the first story either.
In hindsight, the first story was far easier to read, but I'm glad we read them.
Definitely.
The other one. The other one's wild, and in
it
both...
also proclaims that he was the best piper in Ireland, rather than just County Mayo.
So that's Turlough O'Carolan, must have been how he... No, oh, actually, no, that's the harp, sorry. But, no, very funny, and funny that the big thing is that hundreds of old women are shared in both of those stories.
We're living in the Banshee's house. I presume they were all just Banshees then.
Yeah, exactly.
On the top of Grove Bastard.
We're having a great time, and as we know, that used to be a thing for Crom. So, it's great fun. But... That's it, I'd say. That's everything to know about Irish music ever.
You can't even possibly want to think about knowing anything else.
No, and you wouldn't want to go and research it anymore at all. We've said everything that there is to hear. But no, that was our flyover of music as a general theme between folklore and myth. I hope it was enjoyable for you to hear. It's good to be back.
It's good to be back.
On the airwaves.
Broadcasting live from Luke's, previously Aaron's, bedroom.
It's our bedroom, Aaron. I can't wait to sleep with you tonight.
Oh, God, that's not happening. I'm going to be on the other side of that wall. In my own bed. Yeah. That was previously yours.
That was previously my bed. Oh, my God. Yeah, it's very odd for anyone listening that, doesn't know us. Hi, not my mom. But anyway... that's it for now. We'll be back with another episode with a very... We might have a really interesting episode for the next one.
There might be some very interesting conversation.
You'll definitely be hearing some Bowron.
You'll definitely be hearing some other voice.
Hopefully.
We hope.
Imagine if we get a different episode now. But yeah, we're open to do a bit of an interview for the next episode. And if we can't, we won't. You'll be getting an episode about, I don't know, some lad in the ditch, maybe somewhere.
Bad of the ditch.
A whole episode. If we made one episode about music, we'll make a series about bad. But anyway, thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for waiting. If you waited, if you didn't wait, you didn't like us at all, did you?
Yeah. Is that all it takes for us to go away and you stop paying attention? Then?
Nah.
You have the attention span of a gnat.
That's it. Now.
Bye.
That was it. We smashed the card glass.
Exploded.
All right.
Music by Gareth Quinn Redmond. Illustration by Ashling Larkin Design.
very funny recently.
Can I tell you a bad joke that my dad told me?
Yeah.
Man went to the doctor and he said, "Doctor, I have a very bad genetic disease." And the doctor asked him, "What is it?" He said, "Well, I have really bad diarrhea." And the doctor says, "That's not genetics." And the man says, "But it's in my genes."